puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
7:45 and time for our weekly fix of local history. Manitoba's version of the Da Vinci Code, Gordon Goldsborough, is here. Good morning.
Good morning, Nadja.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. And yourself?
I'm well. I'm ready for my weekly history lesson. Remind us of the clue for this week.
Well, I said last week that today we were going to look at a building in Killarney, Manitoba, that is linked to the provincial government's early efforts to show farmers how to farm.
So I love that the government had a role in teaching farmers how to farm. That's unusual.
Well, the government often takes a leading role in a lot of things,
right.
So I don't think it was terribly surprising. In fact, you know, if you think about when in the early 20th century, when the southern part of the province was really being developed for farming, the provincial government and the federal government took a leading role in bringing people here because there weren't a lot of people initially, and then people came from all over the world. Well, that was a bit of a problem in that a lot of these people who were coming here ostensibly to take up farms didn't have a lot of experience. Either they had come from places where there wasn't a tradition of farming, so they themselves were not really farmers.
Okay.
They needed to be educated. Or they came from a place that was, you know, farming, but they didn't have the same soil conditions, they didn't have the same climate. And so what the experience they had wasn't necessarily directly transferable to the conditions we had here.
Interesting.
So the governments, I think, felt an obligation then to do what they could to raise the level of awareness of these people who are going to become farmers, to help make them successful farmers. So in the early 20th century, one of the things that the provincial government did was that they opened something called the Manitoba Agricultural College. And that was intended to target the people who came here without a lot of experience. You could show them modern farming techniques. Well, in fact, it was in things like horticulture, agricultural engineering, the raising of animals, management of farming, even home economics. Because, of course, the usual combination on these farms was the man to do the cropping and the woman to run the household, so they often both needed training. So
there's a real tie then between immigration and agriculture.
Well, in fact, the department at that time was called the Department of Agriculture and Immigration. And today we think that those two things are completely different.
Yeah.
But at the early 20th century, they were intricately linked. So it started initially in a campus that we now call Tuxedo. In fact, it's the current site for the Asper Jewish Community Campus.
Okay.
That was the Manitoba Agricultural College, but they quickly outgrew the spot. So they moved to a new site in the southern part. Well, in fact, it was actually beyond the city at that time. The city has now grown to surround it. And that's the current university campus of the University of Manitoba.
Okay.
In fact, if you are out there, if you walk around the administration building on the east-facing side, it still says emblazoned near the top, Agricultural College. And I bet you people often wonder, why is it called that? But it was. That was what it was when it was first built back in 1913. Well, that addressed one part of the equation, but the other part about how do you orient people who do have a farming background but who aren't familiar with the conditions here, how do you get them aware? So about 1913, the provincial government started setting up what they called demonstration farms. The idea was they would go to an established farmer, they would buy from the farmer a small parcel of land. It was usually something in the range of about 40 acres. They would hire the farmer they had bought it from to sow it with crops that were typical of that region. So the idea was other people who had newly arrived in that region would say, oh, I see they're growing wheat or oats or whatever varieties, you know, and that would hopefully educate them as to what could grow. And over the course of the summer, they would watch the crop mature and they would see how well it performed. So it was really sort of show and tell.
Yeah, a real experiential learning.
They had them all over the province, basically in each major soil type around the province, they would have a demonstration farm. But they were fairly small. Then they realized that, you know, they could kick it up a little bit by starting to maybe introduce farmers to the ideas of other things that they could raise on their farms beyond sort of the basics. I mean, at one time it was thought of farmers in Manitoba was just wheat,
right.
Wheat, and that's it. But, well, they started saying, well, how about other things you could grow? I mean, you could, for example, grow fruit crops, perhaps. You could grow garden crops, things like potatoes or turnips,
right.
Perhaps. If you had animals on your farm, maybe you would want to grow, you know, things more than just, you know, your beef. Maybe you'd want to have things like poultry of some kind. Maybe you'd want to have, bees, you know, because then you can produce honey and as an additional source of revenue. So the whole thing was predicated on giving these farmers sort of a diversified source of income.
And maximizing productivity.
Absolutely. Because a lot of these things could be done year-round. So as opposed to doing it just in the summertime when you could grow your crops, you know, if you could, for example, grow certain things year-round, certain animals, for example, it might give you a more stable income.
How do these immigrants respond to this approach?
Well, that was the whole crux of it, was to, you know, better to show them, and then they see it for themselves. Mm-hmm. And gradually they come around to the idea that, hey, this was a good idea and I thought of it. You know, nobody's telling you to do this.
There's ownership.
Yeah. So in 1914, in what could have been called, I guess, an example of sort of political pork barreling, in other words, where the politician brings goodies to their own constituency, a fellow by the name of George Lawrence, who was the MLA in the provincial government for the area of Killarney, he brought to his constituency the first large-scale demonstration farm. So in other words, it wasn't just a piece cut off an existing farm. It was a farm under its own. It had not only land, but it also had buildings that were attached to it. Okay. So they bought about 75 acres of land just south of the town of Killarney, or what was at that time where the town of Killarney was. And it was a beautiful site, just overlooking Killarney Lake. Today, it's just a gorgeous spot. Mm. They built a barn for livestock. They built a machine shed. They built a farmhouse. The idea was, I think, well, first of all, they needed to provide a home for the superintendent of this farm, where he could live. But they also, I think, wanted to highlight what a farmhouse could be, you know, and so therefore they equipped that farmhouse with a lot of modern amenities that, you know, for that time were considerably unusual. So they had, for example, indoor plumbing, an indoor mm-hmm. toilet. They had hot and cold running water. Perhaps most interestingly, they had electric lighting. And, you know, a lot of parts mm-hmm. of rural Manitoba, they didn't get electric lights until the 50s or 60s sometimes. Right. So to have this in 1914 was pretty revolutionary. So what they did is they started planting this area to crops. But they decided that they were really going to focus on crops that weren't widely grown and which could be potential, you know, things for enriching farm income. So they planted, for example, over 500 fruit trees. There were apples, about 10 varieties of apples. They had 6 varieties of crab apples, 3 varieties of plums. They had cherries. They had gooseberries, currants, raspberries. They even planted a very cold-tolerant grape variety called a beta grape. So, for example, in the very first year they tried beekeeping, they had 2 hives that apparently produced 115 pounds of honey.
What?
That just blows me away.
Just two beehives.
2 beehives, apparently, which seems, you know, pretty excessive, but who knows? They had a very good crop that year. And they planted a variety of other garden crops. They had a whole bunch of different kinds of potatoes. They had several kinds of turnips. Of course, both of those are very hardy vegetables, you know, that can keep well during the wintertime. Yeah. So, of course, you could feed your family throughout the year. They also, though, they cooperated with the Manitoba Agricultural College back in Winnipeg. So they would put in little plots to test various varieties. Mm-hmm. You know, so if there was a new type of wheat or a new type of oats that they wanted to see how well it would do in Manitoba, under different climatic conditions, under different soil conditions, sure, they could plant it here in Winnipeg, mm-hmm. but they'd also want to try it in other places to see how it would perform there too. So they also planted these little, in fact, they were just little 1/10 acre plots that they mm-hmm. would plant out some of these other things.
So it seems like a success story.
Oh, it was, absolutely. In fact, they were so successful that within a few years they were thinking, well, they should have another one. So in 1918, they opened one at Bertel in western Manitoba, and they in fact established some additional fruit plantations in other places, at Fox Warren, at Gilbert Plains, at Rapid City. You know, so there was really an effort to show people around the province what sorts of things they could grow on their mm-hmm. on their gardens and in their farms. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until the Second World War that things started to change, and I think part of the reason for that is that after the war, you've got the extension service of the provincial government spreading out across the province. So they began to appoint what they call agricultural representatives around the province, mm-hmm. or what today we call ag reps. And these ag reps would be in all the communities around the province. So the necessity of having a farm, a discrete area where you could do this wasn't seen as necessary. So in fact, the farm at Bertel closed in the 1930s after running for about a dozen years or so. The one at Killarney that had been running the longest, it closed in 1947.
Okay.
There's where we get into our abandoned story, because of course that's ultimately the theme of this series. So when it closed as a functioning demonstration farm, the grounds were purchased by the local agricultural society and turned into the local fairgrounds.
Okay.
You know, and they would have races and, you know, social occasions. But the buildings themselves, the barn, the chicken coop, the machine shed, I'm not quite sure what has happened to them, and maybe one of our listeners will be able to tell me. But the only building that exists on the site today is that farmhouse, that innovative farmhouse. And for a while, it was used as the barracks for the local RCMP detachment. For a while, it was used as a private school. And then most recently, it was used as sort of a museum of sorts. People would donate antiques, and they would have occasions when they would open up for people to come look. But over time, the number of people that were able to operate the museum, you know, waned. And so by 2014, apparently they had kind of reached the end of the road for the museum. And so they got rid of all the contents, they sold them all off, and they put out a call looking for someone to do something with this building that had been sitting there now for, well, 100 years.
Yeah.
And so a local group came together. What's really inspiring about this example is that there hadn't previously been a group to do this, but there was a person particularly who said, you know, why don't we have a local arts council? And this arts council could promote local arts endeavors. It could promote workshops and gallery showings of art. And so they convened a group together. They have taken possession of the building. The building, by the way, is owned by the local municipality. And this group has now been given the opportunity to try to turn it into something useful.
That's so great.
Yeah. So last summer, they spent the summer, sort of the first phase, and they did the exterior. They scraped a lot of the old wood siding and fixed it up. They did a lot of restoration to the veranda. The second phase, which is supposed to happen this summer, in fact, I've been talking with them over the last couple of weeks, and it sounds like they're ready to go any day now, starting on the second phase, is to bring the building up to a modern building code. Because, of course, a 100-year-old building, even though it was kind of innovative for its day today.
Not so much in 2017.
Not so much. So basically, they're going to bring it up to modern code. It'll have new plumbing, it'll have new electrical wiring, a new heating system. So that the idea is that on the main floor, they'll have gallery space that you could have art exhibits. And on the second floor, there's going to be a series of rooms basically for classrooms so that you could have, you know, classes on how to do painting and sculpting and, you know, all these various arts. So it's really exciting to see an old building that sat vacant for a number of years that had, you know, gone back really to almost the beginnings of agriculture in Manitoba.
Yeah.
See it now having a new life,
revitalized,
absolutely
not so abandoned anymore.
That's right.
That's lovely. We're going to have to get them in the show as well, I think.
Well, you might want to because, in fact, some of our listeners may be interested in helping with the project. I know that they are certainly they're fundraising.
Yeah.
They are short of funds to get that project underway. So, if anybody's willing to make a donation to the project, they will issue a tax receipt.
Excellent.
And you can get in touch with the local municipality there, the municipality of Killarney Turtle Mountain.
Gordon, thank you so much. This is fantastic.
You're welcome.
What's our clue for next week?
Well, next week we're going to look at a mysterious concrete pillar that stands all by itself in the center of the Assiniboine River, about 3 miles downstream of Brandon.
See, this is cryptic. I love it. Gordon, thanks so much. We'll see you next week.
We will do.
No. Every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.